Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, is quite heavy. Chapter 28, text number 61. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. This is from the chapter. Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life.
Maya hi esha maya srishta.
Maya hi esha maya srishta.
Yat pumam sam striyam satim.
Yat pumam sam striyam satim.
Manyase no bayam
yadvai. Manyase no bayam yadvai.
Hamso pasya vayogatim.
Hamso pasya vayogatim.
Maya hi esha maya srishta.
Maya
Yat pumam sam striyam satim.
Yat pumam sam striyam satim.
Manyase no payam yadvai.
Manyase no payam yadvai.
Hamso pasya vayogatim.
Hamso pasya vayogatim.
Maya.
Maya.
Illusory energy.
Illusory energy.
P. Certainly. Isha.
This.
Maya.
Maya.
By me.
By me.
Srishta.
Srishta.
Created.
Created.
Yat.
Yat.
From.
From.
Which? Oh, sorry, from which?
From which?
Pumam sam.
Pumam sam.
A male.
A male.
Striyam.
Striyam.
A female.
Female.
Satim.
Satim.
Chaste.
Manyase.
You think.
You think.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
Ubayam.
Ubayam.
Both.
Both.
Yat.
Yat.
Because.
Because.
By.
By.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Hamso.
Hamso.
Freed from material contamination.
Freed from material contamination.
Pasya.
Pasya.
Just see.
Just see.
Avayo.
Avayo.
Our. Gatim, factual position. Sometimes you think yourself a man. Pumam sam. Sometimes a chaste woman. Striyam satim. And sometimes a neutral eunuch. And that's na ubayam, not both. Just like we have senayor ubayor madje, right? Arjuna says senayor ubayor madje, take me in the middle or between both the armies. Ubayor means both, right? And that's what you get, ubayam, both. This is all because of the body. This is all because of the body, which is created by the illusory energy. And that's the first line. Maya hi esha maya srishta. This This illusory energy is my potency, my asrishta, is created by my energy, or maya. It's interesting actually, see there's maya, it looks like the same word, but actually the second one is maya, me, or mine, ma, and ma. This is all because of the body, which is created by the illusory energy. This illusory energy is my potency. And actually, both of us, you and I, are pure spiritual identities. Now, just try to understand this. I'm trying to explain our factual position. The factual position of both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity is qualitatively one. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Spirit, the Super Soul, and the living entity is the individual Spirit Soul. Even though both of them our original spiritual identities, the living entity forgets his identity when he comes in contact with material nature and becomes conditioned. At such a time, he identifies himself as a product of the material nature. Because of the material body, he forgets that he is the eternal Sanatan, part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in this way. Mama Aivamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatanaha. The word Sanatana is found in several places in Bhagavad Gita. Both the Lord and the living entity are Sanatana. Eternal. And there is also a place known as Sanatana, beyond the material nature. The real residence of both the living entity and God is the domain of Sanatana, not this material world. The material world is the temporary external energy of the Lord, and the living entity is placed in this material world because he wanted to imitate the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this material world, he tries to enjoy his senses to his best capacity. All the activities of the conditioned soul within the material world are perpetually taking place in different types of bodies. But when the living entity acquires developed consciousness, he should try to rectify his situation and again become a member of the spiritual world. The process by which one can return home, back to Godhead, is Bhakti Yoga, sometimes called Sanatana Dharma. Instead of accepting a temporary occupational duty based on the material body, one should take to the process of Sanatana Dharma, or Bhakti Yoga, so that he can put an end to this perpetual bondage in material bodies and return home back to Godhead. As long as human society works on the basis of false material identification, all the so-called advancements of science and philosophy are simply useless. Shrama, eva hi kevalam, useless. And ashrama, the ashrama means not useless. Buddha Vinayaraj told me that. He said the brahmacharis should not be useless. They should be useful. And the grihasthas do, they're in an ashram. As long as human society works on the basis of false material identification, all the so-called advancements of science and philosophy are simply useless. They only serve to mislead human society. Antaya tandaya upaniyamana. In the material world, the blind simply lead the blind. Om Agyana Timirandasya Anjana Sadakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Tadati Svapadamtikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pamandam Gayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Kurundi Natavinam. Okay. Yat pumam sam striyam satim manyase nobayam yadvai. Sometimes we're thinking we're a man. Pumsam or pumam sam. Sometimes we're thinking striyam satim, a chaste wife. And sometimes we're thinking manyase no bayam yadvai, we're in between. Not an unusual phenomena. Not male, not female. And why? Why? Can somebody turn off that? The notifications, we're getting beep, 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 beep all the time. Mobile phones in silent mode. Turn off all notifications, especially in Bhagavad Town class. So why? Why? The living entity is originally pure. Papa says it, the factual position of both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity is qualitatively one. Qualitatively one. So what does that mean? Sat, Chit, Ananda, Vigraha. Originally Sat, Chit, Ananda. But under the influence of the material energy which creates all of these illusory forms, we misidentify. We identify as the body. So this is actually a creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even the illusion. Maya hi isha maya srishta. Maya, mama maya durachaya, very difficult to overcome, right? The illusory energy, which is Krishna's energy, covers the original spiritual position. Just like drops of water that fall from the cloud in rain are pure. Right? There's nothing as sweet as pure rainwater, which is also Krishna. My grandma. You don't see it so much in Victoria because it rains more here. But in South Australia, every house had, at least when I was a kid, had a rainwater tank in the backyard. And usually full. And the water out of those rainwater tanks was... Every time I would go to my grandma's house, the first place I would go is to the laundry. My grandma would have a jug of water and as a drink, all it was so sweet, sweet water. You know, usually in the houses that we lived in, there would be two taps on the sink, the bore water that you would use for washing and never drink it because it's so salty. And then the other tap would be the rainwater tap. That's the one that you would drink and cook with, the other one you wash clothes and whatever. So, originally the rain is falling and it's pure. But then when it hits the dirt, what have you got? And you know, when it's falling, it's clear, it's pure, it's contaminated. But then when it hits the ground, what have you got? Huh? You got mud, right? But, you know, they say it's clear as mud, which means not clear at all. Yet, in the mud is water. The water's still there. The water is still, and even is there in its pure state. It's just mixed up with the dirt, and so very difficult to distinguish the water from the dirt, because you can tell the difference between dry dirt and mud. So similarly also, the living entity is originally pure, but when we fall down into the material realm, then our original pure consciousness gets covered over by these different forms. Pum sam striyam satim manyase nubayam yadvaya. So therefore we think, even though we're originally pure, we think, yes, I'm an Australian. I love my country. I'm an Indian. I love my country. I'm a German. I like Australia. And that can change. He can change, he can become an Australian. In fact, many of my Indian friends, actually, they're not Indians, they're all Australians. Even living in India, they're still an Australian. So this is bewildering, because it's changing. According to this bodily identification, one lifetime we're thinking I'm a male, the next lifetime we're thinking I'm a female, and the next lifetime... And this is all depending on our karma, all depending on the activities that we performed, we get different reactions. So in some lifetimes we're confused. We don't know what we are. Yet there's the urge to know oneself, which is very interesting. There's this urge, I need to know who I am. Who am I? In order to be satisfied, we need to know who am I? And of course, that awakening of consciousness, or that awakening of, or that becoming alert to the science of understanding the change of body and trying to work out who I actually am, that I'm something separate. You know, it doesn't take a lot. It only takes a little amount of intelligence to realize that we're not the body. You know, Prabhupada gives the example of, we don't say, I hand. We say, my hand. And so we can sense our separateness even from the body. Of course, this is Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. We're simultaneously one with, but also different from the body. Because, if somebody hits you with their hand, hey, you hit me. Huh? So, on the one hand, we can separate ourselves. Even, my mind is giving me trouble today. Right? Or we'll say, I'm disturbed. So, we on the one hand, we can intellectually, with a little bit of intelligence, discrimination, with a little amount of discriminatory power, and that discrimination comes with the human form of life. That power of discrimination is a gift of the human form, as is the process of bhakti. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, and the second chapter is described as the summary of the whole of the Bhagavad Gita, and there's the description of bhakti and Prabhupada, and Krishna calls it buddhi yoga, right? Buddhi meaning intelligence. And so the human form of life is endowed with this intelligence, or that ability to discriminate, and so we're able to identify that I'm not this body. What is it? Dehinos minyata dehe komaram jovanam jara. Right, and as we go through the different changes of even this body, we learn to appreciate more and more that we're not the body. Huh? In fact, the body the human form is a wonderful opportunity, but also a handicap. Huh? So, because of the body, and because of the body created by the material energy, and even though the body is, the soul is sanatana, mentioned here. Prabhupada mentions the word sanatana. How many times in the purport did Prabhupada mention the word sanatana? Anybody remember?
Five times.
Yeah, five times. Let's have a look. You might be right. Well, I'll have another later. We're eternal. But because of the power of the material energy, even though we're eternal, that consciousness of eternality gets covered over. Just like when the water falls into the dirt, then what you've got is mud. And so the original position of the pure water is lost. But you can get the water out. Right? The water can come out, just as the material energy clouds or covers the original spiritual position of the living entity. But through the appropriate processes, or through the appropriate process, the contaminated or the covered consciousness of the eternal spirit soul can be reawakened or re-established or regained. Huh? Because of the material body, he forgets that he is the eternal sanatana, so there's one, part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in this way. Mama evamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. Two. Huh? Both the Lord and the living entity are sanatana. Three. And there is also a place known as sanatana. Four. The real residence of both the living entity and God is the domain of sanatana. Five. Okay, I think there's more than here down here. Sanatana dharma. Six. And here, sanatana dharma or bhakti yoga. So seven mentions of the word tsunami. So this is the original consciousness, the eternal part and parcel of Krishna, Mam Aivamsa. We're actually a part of Krishna. We're a minute, infinitesimally small part, the same as, but infinitesimally small part of the original personality. That's why we have personality. Because we're a part and parcel of Krishna and he's the supreme personality, then we, as a small part of God, have also got personality. That means likes and dislikes. We like things and we dislike things. Personality means senses. We are also sensual. But the other day, a thing that I remember, I've been thinking of, the spiritual master is described as a representative of God, right? And so he is worshipped as good as God. But he's not God. He's a representative of God, he's as good as God, but he's not God. Nanda Mandir gave class the other day, 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? Or was it last weekend? No, I think it was the weekend before. And he mentioned how Prabhupada had made the comment that, how can I be God? I'm as good as God, or the representative of God, but I'm not God, because God knows everything and I don't. The spiritual master, as a representative of God, is able to present the knowledge or the proper understanding of God. But even though he's a representative of God and is as good as God, he's not God. One of the reasons why, as Prabhupada explained, I don't know everything. We know something as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we can't know everything. So we have the same qualities, but not the same qualification. And as such, we have our original eternal position in relationship with Krishna, and out of or outside of this material world, which is limited and temporary, and where everything is changing, and where our original spiritual position is bewildered. But our original place is in the Sanatana Dharma, as opposed, and of course I don't think Prabhupada mentioned Sanatana Dharma here, but there's that place where our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our original proper understanding of self and our constitutional position is situated in the eternal spiritual world. And as Prabhupada points out here, the living entity is placed in this material world because he wanted to imitate the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want to become supreme. We want to enjoy. But what's our experience? What's our experience in attempting to enjoy in the material world? What happens?
Frustration.
Have you tried it?
Frustration.
Frustration. Yeah. We're always, even, you know, you think, oh, I'm getting a bit older now, my material desires should be decreasing. The desire to enjoy the material world should be diminishing. Huh? But have a guess what? It is persistent. It is persistent. Prabhupada gives the example of the old man on his deathbed. Huh? And when a young girl, the daughter of his friend, came, he couldn't keep his eyes off of the young girl. The material energy, the push, the desire to enjoy, because we're in Andamaya Bihasat. It's not unusual. It's not unusual because we're part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna likes to enjoy. Then so do we. But we're looking for enjoyment in the wrong place. We have to see that, we have to satisfy that desire to enjoy by param drishtva, right, a higher taste of devotional service, where that desire to enjoy is satisfied through the process of here, sanatana dharma, our eternal activities. We're looking for enjoyment and pleasure in the temporary activities of the material creation. But the end result is disgust, dissatisfaction, frustration. And so this is the means by which we get out of the material conception of life is the process by which we uncover our spiritual identity. And of course, that's the process of bhakti, the process of practicing our eternal occupation in relationship with Krishna. And here, Prabhupada says here, the process by which one can return home back to Godhead is bhakti yoga, sometimes called sanatana dharma. It's our eternal occupation. Our temporary occupation is to chase after the phantasmagoria of material existence. It's like a mirage. Again, when I was a kid living in South Australia, where it gets very hot in the summertime, you're driving through the hills, and then in the distance you'll see what looks like water. And as you drive towards it, it keeps on getting further away. It looks like water, but it's not water. So we're like the animal in the desert who's thirsty, and he sees the mirage and then he's walking towards it, but it keeps on going away. The material existence is like that. It's a mirage, it's an illusion. It doesn't exist. But we keep, it still has power. Because it's Krishna's energy, it has power. And it bewilders us because that's our desire, to enjoy separately from Krishna. So when we want to enjoy separately from Krishna, then Krishna creates this illusion for us. Oh yes, you could be the enjoyer. Well, actually Krishna doesn't create it. The material energy is Durga, with her 10 weapons on a tiger. Sometimes described as a lion, sometimes described as a tiger. Yeah, but I like the description of a tiger, because Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, reading the introduction, Prabhupada says we're all swallowed, we're devoured by the tiger of nescience. Beautiful, beautiful statement by Prabhupada. We're swallowed up by the tiger of nescience. And so therefore we're chasing after those mirages. And you know, we're so habituated to doing it. We forget. We're so habituated to chasing after material enjoyment. We have to pinch ourselves on and wake up. Jiva jago. You know, the process of bhakti is very much in the mode of goodness, but we're addicted to the mode of passion and ignorance. And even though goodness is the most satisfying, still we find it difficult to follow, to practice. So in the beginning it tastes bitter. And so our natural, you know, because we want to enjoy, so-called enjoy, we find the austerity and the discipline and the practice of bhakti to be constraining, when in actual fact it's liberating. And Prabhupada says here, when the living entity, and this is what the human life, this is what the human form of life is for. Instead of chasing the temporary activities of material existence, the human form of life is meant to re-establish the Sanatana Dharma. Right? The activities, the eternal activities. And Prabhupada says here, this is bhakti yoga. So even it appears that we're living in Albert Park at 197 Dank Street, in the state of Victoria, in the country of Australia. You know, it appears like we're in the material world. Actually, we're not. But Prabhupada said, this is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan. And why is that? It's because the activities of Sanatana Dharma are practiced here. Just like we're hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is an eternal practice of bhakti. Matura manahas tu ne'ati. It's not a material activity. Washing the pots, cleaning the courtyard, counting the donations, of which there are not very many at the moment. cooking, even distributing prasad, these activities are not of the material world. They're of the pure spiritual realm. So even though it appears like we're living in a material world, we're not. That's what Prabhupada said. This is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan, because we have Radha Ballabha, beautiful Radha Ballabha, who we're serving. And so Prabhupada would say, the temple, it appears as if it's in the material world, but it's like an embassy of the spiritual world. And the activities that are performed in the embassy of the spiritual world are the same as the activities that are performed in the spiritual realm. So in that way, we establish Sanatana Dharma, and also Sanatana Dharma. Right? This is the activities that perform here are the same activities as that performed in the spiritual world. Sanatana Dharma takes us to Sanatana Dharma. Is that right? There's difference between the two. All the activities of the conditioned soul within this material world are perpetually taking place in different types of bodies. So this is going on and on and on and on and on. Although the material world is sometimes manifest and sometimes not, right? Sometimes manifest and sometimes not. It is eternally existing. Just sometimes, what is it called? What's the word for manifest? Avyakta and avyakta. Right? Vyakta means manifest, just like it's all manifest. Avyakta means the material energy is drawn back into the body of Mahavishnu. Right? And lays, everybody lies there dormant for some time. But then out we come again and off we go. We're doing all of our things. What is it? Pumam sam striyam satim nobayam nobayam yadvai. So, in order to recover our sanatan position, we need to engage again in sanatan dharma or sanatan activities in order to be elevated into the sanatan dharma. And so that's the process of extracting the water out of the mud, the process of extracting the pure spiritual consciousness of the living entity out of the conception of material life. I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm a Australian, I'm an Indian, I'm a German, or what, I'm a whatever. That process is bhakti yoga. And you know, I was thinking the other day, this is the real purpose of the Varnashram system. The Varnashram system is not that we think I'm a brahmachari, I'm a grihastha, I'm a whatever. That's a setting within which we sit by default and by following the prescriptions for each of the ashrams and occupations, we can be peaceful and properly situated. But it's not that we are those things. Actually, the whole purpose of the Varnashram Dharma, is to reawaken our original spiritual identity through the process of bhakti. And the Varnashram system is meant to support the practice of bhakti. Right? That's the most important part. And so, you know, depending on our age and depending on our occupation, there are certain guidelines, rules and regulations to order and structure society so that we'll be steady and peacefully situated and then able to practice our bhajan, basically. It's all there to keep us busy in the daytime, right, according to the rules and regulations. But then the real purpose of life is actually to perform our bhajan. That's what the Varnashram system is designed to do, right, to support that. That's Daivi Varnashram. Otherwise, you know, I'm a householder, or I'm a brahmachari, or I'm a chatriya, sudra, whatever. This is all actually the external manifestation again. Right? But that structure is not so that we identify with those things, but so we can identify with our spiritual nature. Right? Transcendent. So in that sense, those things are superfluous. That's why Lord Chaitanya said to Ramananda Roy, go on, go on. This is external. It's external. And you know, he recognizes spiritual activity when Ramananda Roy starts to describe the hearing and chanting process. How to conquer the unconquerable. How do we conquer the unconquerable? By hearing about him. By hearing and chanting. This is our process. Sravanadi Shuddha Chitte. So that by hearing and chanting, by the process of bhakti, and through the process of hearing and then following, obviously, we hear, we inquire, we hear, we serve. This is our process, pretty much. And then by the engagement in that service, gradually, our original spiritual identity manifests naturally, just comes out. What is it? Shravanani Sudha Chitte Karaye Udoy. It rises up. Our understanding of our spiritual identity naturally rises up. We naturally become enthused Pratyaksavagamam damyam susukam kartam avyayam. The process of bhakti naturally gives rise to self-realization. Just like when we're in the kirtan and we're chanting Hare Krishna, then we naturally feel enthused. You can't not dance. You can't not move. You're forced to. Huh? I remember when I first went to Mayapur, we flew from Melbourne to Sydney. We arrived in Sydney at about midday. Then we flew to Perth. This is the longest trip that I've ever had to get to Mayapur. Then we flew to Singapore. Then we flew to Madras. Then we flew to Calcutta, right? And you know, we were in Singapore at midnight, I suppose. Then we got to Madras. It was late at night. And I remember driving to Mahabalipuram, which is a beautiful place. At least it was then. I don't know what it's like now. And the waves, you know, we woke up in the morning and the devotees had been to India before. They were already in the surf, swimming and catching the waves. So I thought, oh, this is Maya. So anyway, then I remember breakfast at Mahabalipuram. They had all of these entertainers, these guys kind of dressed up with horse kind of dress, and there was one guy swallowing rocks. And the gentleman who'd cooked breakfast for us, the cook, he wanted to show that he was a Brahmana, so he had a Brahmin thread on the outside of his shirt. So, you know, I arrived in India and it's just all this culture shock all at once, especially we saw, I saw all of these people sleeping on the streets. And they were just lined up on a footpath. And I was thinking, this is these people's house. This is where they live. This is their bedroom on the street. I was just so shocked by all of this. So anyway, then, you know, so we'd already travelled all day. And then overnight we stayed in Mahabalipuram. Then the next afternoon, we flew to Calcutta, and we got into Calcutta at midnight. Right? At midnight. And the buses were there, and again we were driving, and I seen the people sleeping in the street, and I was thinking, oh no, what is this place? But then we got to Mayapur at 3:30 in the morning. Travelled all night in the bus. And we were given our rooms, you know, checked in and given our, it must have been early, we probably came in at, I don't know, 3:00, because I remember sitting around waiting to be registered and all this kind of stuff, right? But then we got our rooms and it was, you know, 4:00. And so we all jumped into the shower and got ready and ran to the temple for Mangalarti at 4:30. And I'll never forget the sound of the mrungas. I hadn't heard a trained Bengali playing the mridanga properly, right? And you know how they go, whoop, 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 whoop. Right? So and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says how enthusing, how enlivening it is to hear the sound of the mridanga. And so there we were in front of Radha Madhava in Mayapur, just arrived, completely exhausted, but the sound of the mridanga just made us jump, made us dance. So the process of bhakti gives automatically that experience of elation, of jubilation. Prabhupada mentions, you know, in when he's talking about the Vyasa Puja, how we dance in jubilation when we realize that we're a servant of our eternal master. So now the process of bhakti just naturally gives rise to this experience of elation, of jubilation, of enthusiasm. Right? I remember when Kripa Sindhu first came to the temple, the morning program, and he came for greeting the deities and offered his obeisances, you know, to Radhabalava, Gornitai, Radhabalava, Lord Jagannath. Then he came and offered flowers to Srila Prabhupada, and then he was just crying. He just had tears pouring down. Then Vijay Gopikesh got on his case, you know, being a sahaja, I think, or whatever. But, you know, he's just naturally a very soft-hearted person. Right? And so when he came and, you know, he heard the kirtan and he saw Radhabhagavata and the worship of Srila Prabhupada, then naturally he just had tears coming from his eyes. Right? So, you know, bhakti is such a powerful process. It is able to dissolve all of these coverings of false ego, ahankara, is dissolved by the process of bhakti. And so it's so important for us to focus on the details, actually, of the bhakti process so that we can easily eradicate this confusion and this the coverings of material existence that we've accepted. Because of the desire to imitate and to want to be a competitor with Krishna, we're given this bondage and this... The covering of material energy bewilders us, but the process of Sanatana Dharma, the process of bhakti, is so powerful that it's able to remove those coverings of ignorance and reawaken our spiritual. And so we feel that, just like when I was in Mayapur, when I got to Mayapur, even though I was completely bewildered and exhausted after travelling. It took us 2 days to get to Mayapur. It shouldn't take that long. Then there was the horror trip to Jagannath Puri, because then the devotees, after the festival in Mayapur, the devotees had organised us to go to Jagannath Puri, but by bus. And it was a 32-hour drive by bus to get to Jagannath Puri. So that was... My first trip to India was a nightmare in terms of travel. You know, how long does it take to get to Jagannath Puri? 4 hours from Mayapur to Calcutta. And then you get on the train and you go overnight. If you're sensible, right? That's the way to do it. But for some reason the devotees decided we'll go by bus. And they cooked breakfast. Okay, they cooked breakfast for us, so we had breakfast first. We had to take away breakfast. But then there were no meals between there and the time it took to get to Jagannath Puri. And you know, we stopped different places, and actually the devotees were plotting how to kill the bus driver. I was so frustrated after 24 hours. You know, let's throw these bus drivers off the bus. And there were devotees who were sick. After the trip to Jagannath Puri, there were devotees who had to go to hospital. They were so ill. You know, they'd been 2 weeks in Mayapur, completely had dysentery or whatever it was. And their first trip to India was quite enough. And when I was in Mayapur, every day I was chanting 32 rounds. I was thinking, yeah, rah, rah, pretty. But then after the trip to Jagannath Puri, and then the trip to the, the bus drive, we had to drive the bus then back to Calcutta. I couldn't even, I had difficulty getting out of bed at 7 o'clock in the morning. Got a flu, and then by the time I got to Vrindavan, I was struggling. So I was a Paramahamsa when I left Mayapur. By the time I got to Vrindavan, I was a wretch. I could hardly jump around. So, but anyway, Krishna was teaching me a lesson. You know, don't get too ahead of yourself. But the power, the potency of bhakti, we should never, and bhakti can never actually be constrained. If bhakti is practiced properly, then it transcends all of this confusion. You know, that I think I'm a householder, or I think I'm an administrator, I think I'm a whatever. The whole. But having said that, we need to take advantage of this structure of this, because it supports, just like Prabhupada says here, as long as human society works on the basis of false material identification, all the so-called advancements of science and philosophy are simply useless. But that doesn't mean we reject science or that we reject philosophy. We don't reject these things. We use them because they're supportive. But we need to have a proper understanding of philosophy. We need a proper understanding of the science of business, say, for example. We're all experiencing what is going to be a very set of tough lessons in the school of hard knocks. Everybody at the moment, we're all going to experience very painful and difficult experience of having no money, right? As we can see by the donation box. and not only us, the whole society, almost all over the world, is experiencing the collapse of modern civilization as we know it, pretty much. That's pretty far out, isn't it? We've never had such an experience. So we need, you know, we need to understand the basics of material existence, and we need to understand how to organize things, how to manage a business, how to speak to people, how to persuade. All these skills may be considered material, and Prabhupada says here, advancements of science and philosophy are useless if it's only engaged in material activities. But when these things are engaged in spiritual activities, then they only enhance and support the process of bhakti. So that even though we renounce these things as being not ours, because we know that things belong to Krishna, then we use them in Krishna's service. This is true renunciation, right? Proper renunciation. So even though the advancement of philosophy and science purely for material gain is useless, we still use them. We don't reject those things. We use them. The experiences that we have now will stand us in good stead in the future. The lessons that we learn in life generally reinforce the principle that material existence is very painful, right? And that spiritual life is everything. Not that we give up material things, because we can't. We've got material bodies. You have to feed them, right? They need sleep. They need some sensual engagement. This is natural. And why we have the Varnashram system? Because it orders all of that for the brahmacharis, for the householders, for the vanaprastas, for the sannyasis. Here's the structure within which we naturally or positively can engage our mind in senses, which it needs to be engaged. And the different ashrams and the different occupations. We need those. Even though they may be illusory, temporary and illusory, we still use them because they all support the process of bhakti. By that engagement, full engagement in the process of bhakti yoga, then the realization of our original, eternal, spiritual, that sanatana identity that's naturally within the heart. What is it? Nitya siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunoi Shravanadik Sudachite Karaye Udoi. By engaging in the process of bhakti, then that the eternal perfection of Krishna Prem, which is already in the heart, is uncovered. That should be our focus. Okay, I'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
In the Bhagavad Gita introduction, it's mentioned that the Gita talks about five topics.
Yes.
Paramatma, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala.
No, the controller. The controller.
And then on
the Purush.
It says how karma is not eternal.
Yes.
But every time the creation comes forth, karma comes forth also.
Yes, but Prabhupada explains that karma can be changed such that if we're engaged in sanatana dharma, then our material karma stops and our spiritual activities start, and then instead of staying in the material world, we're taken out, we're elevated out back to the spiritual realm, and so therefore our material karma is stopped, and so therefore it's not eternal. The other items that are described in the Bhagavad Gita are eternal, always in place, but the activities of material existence can be stopped by the positive engagements of bhakti. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So that's why karma is not eternal. Action is, in one sense it is, but material activities are stopped in favour of or in pursuance of our natural spiritual propensities, spiritual activities, which is sanatana dharma. No?
And then in that case, I also used to wonder how the other activities also kind of minimize their influence.
The
what? Prakriti and
karma. Yes. Yes.
Then they also kind of stop in a sense.
Prakriti? No, well, see, the thing is that prakriti still exists. Sometimes it's manifest, sometimes it's not, but it still exists. That's why it's considered eternal. Yeah, I just finished reading that. Reading it and listening. I got to highly recommend, get a copy of Dravida's recitation of the Bhagavad Gita. It's really good. I listen to it every day when I do my puja. That's what I'm listening to at the moment anyway. I find it's very, very powerful. Bhagavad Gita is very powerful. I should just heed its instructions more often. Any other comments? Questions? Pantraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Sarva Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Ki Jai.